everyone, and welcome to episode 21 of Radio Radar. Second, this is our second new show of the year, right?
I think so.
Wow, I ran out of steam. I got confused.
Wait, is it our third?
No, that's, what,
did that's, I host one?
That was last year. Second new show of the year. Welcome to 2013, peoples who may
We're
have missed
already
last
11 days into 2013.
We are. It's crazy.
I've wasted 11 days of 2013.
You've wasted a lot of. I remember when we got back from the break, everyone was talking about all the great things they did over the break and how the, all their plans for the year.
Yeah.
And you're like, I literally spent all of my break reading about magic cards on the internet.
Reading about magic cards on the internet in a since abandoned hope of turning into a standard edition pro level.
So when you came into the office and said you think you want to try to be a standard edition pro,
yeah.
I thought you were joking.
Oh, no. I was 100% serious in that moment. So what happened?
You were like super excited to talk about it with us.
Yeah.
And everyone was like, dude, what are you talking about?
Yeah, no. I was really into it. And I'm still marginally into it insofar as being a pro at the drafting level. But what happened was
Sophia beat everyone last
time.
Any of us being professional at anything other than sobbing into our iced tea.
It was bad. But now that I've read like a lot of documentation on Magic the Gathering strategy, I feel like I have the next.
We're going to end up throwing you out of the draft.
What?
You're going to be that guy we threw.
I'm going to be motherfucking Eric Tay.
Yeah, that guy. Is he GameSpot?
GameSpot.
That GameSpot guy who came here and played a game with us and he did too well and then we kicked him out of the draft forever. You're flying too close to the sun, man.
I may be fired because of that. Just kidding. We like Eric Tay. Anyway, so. I like Eric Tay.
I'm neutral because I want to like him, but he beat me so bad in Magic cards that I kind of say fuck him.
In fairness, everyone beat you pretty bad in Magic cards.
I used to be really—I was good until everyone got good.
That first draft that we did, you were very good, and then everybody learned how to play again.
Yeah, and I still have—I'm still at the level I was when I was 13. I've not improved my Magic the Gathering skills in the least.
Anyway, we could continue to talk about Magic the Gathering,
and we will.
But I feel like. That's being frowned upon in Games Radar.
Specifically by Henry.
I will say that Gatecrash is coming out February 1st.
Don't worry, we'll have a special podcast devoted to it.
We totally will.
We should.
We got on Wizards of the Coast's review list, so I think they're going to be sending us review. That's very exciting.
By the way, my name is Hollander Cooper. Here with me is...
Tom Magrino.
Henry Gilbert.
And Lucas Sullivan will be joining us a little later to talk about Anarchy Reigns, newest game from Platinum Games. So before we could literally just sit here talking about random nonsense the entire show, which essentially
targeted random nonsense.
Lucas had been in here, that magic discussion could have gone on like twice as long.
I actually saw him like pop up like a prairie dog and look around the room while we were doing that. He could sense it.
He's currently our sensei when it comes to magic.
Well, I'd say Sophia is currently our sensei.
Well, she's just the reigning world champion.
She's more like the person in Lord of the Rings that cut off Sauron's hand.
Right.
And was like, I guess I'm the best now because I killed him. Just because you got fucking lucky.
Right. She totally got lucky.
I used to
remember
that name.
But she doesn't understand the game.
Isildur.
Right.
I just watched all of the movies.
Right, because that's what Hugo Weaving yells at him. Like, Isildur!
Yes. Yeah. So... today's a pretty big show. It's been a crazy week for news. We had some crazy CES news. We had a new Pokemon announcement, like a real Pokemon announcement. And we'll get to all that pretty soon. But first up, we have the top 7 surprisingly fun multiplayer games inside of single-player games. Now, I have a feeling you're right now going to talk about how bad this title is.
You were very, very astute there. So we spent probably as much time talking about this article as the headline of the article as we did what should go into the article.
Peek behind the curtain. At one point, it was the top 7, oops, you got multiplayer in my single player.
Right.
What else was it?
That was my favorite. I don't know. I can't even remember.
There were a lot of variations. But the issue is, this is something that I specifically wanted to talk about because if you look back over the last few years of gaming, there's been this weird shift where people think that a single-player franchise being given a multiplayer component can only end poorly.
Right.
And no matter how many times that's proven wrong, with Tomb Raider being announced that it's going to have multiplayer, people immediately started freaking out again. God of War Ascension, same way. It's announced it's going to have multiplayer. Everyone acts like it's the end of the world.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a trend that we're going to get into where it's actually a pretty good thing.
It's often a pretty good thing.
More times than not, it's a pretty good thing.
I think a lot of players like do this weird math thing in their head where they think a game can like have 100% of its quality and then they have to like give away 20% of quality to make a multiplayer thing. But that's not
right.
That's not how development works.
Or it's like there's 100 people working on this game,
yeah.
And either 100 people could be working on the single player, or 80 people are on the single player and 20 are on the multiplayer.
But more realistically, what happens is there are 100 people working on the single player. The publisher says, you need multiplayer. We're going to outsource it to some guys in Florida.
Right.
Is that cool with you? And also, here's some more money. And then they say, sure. Or they are like, we're going to give you more money to hire up. There's,
right.
And, I mean, as we can see on this list, that it usually ends pretty well. Number 7, which is the weakest entry on the list, as it should be because it's number 7, but still a quality multiplayer game, is Dead Space 2.
Mm-hmm.
Dead Space 2 is on this list for two reasons. Number 1, the multiplayer is actually pretty cool. You get mm-hmm. to play as Necromorphs, experience the world of Dead Space 2 from their point of view, mm-hmm. which is totally new. And you also get to play as like security forces running around and killing the hell out of some Necromorphs with friends.
Yeah, I like that the it had a real Left 4 Dead kind of vibe, too, and that you could still get scared while, well, not scared, but startled while playing it. If you played as a Necromorph side, like, the difference was, like, the humans both could respawn, but humans were way harder to kill, but Necromorphs respawn immediately.
Right.
And you could pick, like, I want to jump out of this vent that I'm right behind this guy and jump on him. And so there were a lot of cool moments like that, and then that would lead to teamwork, too, where you'd have to shoot the baby before he finishes his head-eating animation or whatever.
Right, yeah. It was good. But the other reason this one's on the list is because of, I'll say, despite the multiplayer, Dead Space 2's single player is so much better than Dead Space 1.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's an example of, like, it's like they got multiplayer, and it was really good. It was surprisingly good, and it didn't lower the quality of the single player.
Yeah.
In the least.
I would say Dead Space 1's single player as an experience is a great experience of its type, and Dead Space 2 isn't exactly the same of a single player experience as 1, so they're not directly comparable, but 2's campaign is better in the end than 1's.
Yeah. But yeah, Dead Space 2, it's, if you have the game, it's worth checking out the multiplayer.
I was at the reveal event for that, I remember. Everybody was very shocked by how good it was.
Yeah. And that's a common thread. Number 6 is Red Dead Redemption. Another game, obviously, Rockstar making an amazing, typically Rockstar single-player game, riding around, doing all those things you do in Red Dead Redemption, I guess is the quickest way I can discuss.
So what I'm finding is I haven't played a lot of these.
Okay.
Like Dead Space 2. Well, I played Red Dead Redemption, but I haven't played the multiplayer.
Well, that's fine.
And I haven't played Dead Space 2 at all because I'm a coward. And
you are
can't
a coward.
Play any scary games.
Or do anything that requires courage.
Right.
But so Red Dead Redemption, Rockstar's open world cowboy game. And so there's two parts of the multiplayer that are worth talking about. The first one is the typical like deathmatch style. There are levels where you'll do objectives and kill other teammates.
They put you in some windy gulch and you shoot at each other.
This was probably one of the first Rockstar, like pure Rockstar, not counting Max Payne, games that had really, really good gunplay. A lot of, like, Grand Theft Auto was always like, yeah, it's serviceable. Grand Theft Auto 4 was, like, they had a cool cover system. It worked for what it was. But Red Dead Redemption...
keep shooting at a soft target and hope you hit them.
Red Dead Redemption, partially because of the weaponry of the time, which I have, like, a nerd boner for at all times because I love Western, like, Old West weaponry. It just had, like, the weapons of that time lend themselves to good gameplay because you don't have machine guns. You have guns that have 6 shots, and then you spend, like, a few seconds reloading. You have rifles that you can't shoot, like, 20 shots in at a time, but you can shoot, like, one at a time at a pretty solid pace.
Yep.
And the actual engine was so good that the gameplay itself just ended up being super fun.
And you don't have super advanced explosives like grenades, but you do have dynamite.
Yeah, so it's just a really... The gameplay worked and took advantage of the weaponry, but the reason it's really on this list is because of the open world section. So when you join in with a friend, instead of just going into a lobby, you're literally just dropped into the entire open world of Red Dead Redemption, and you can have up to, I think, 16 people.
Yeah, it can get really crazy on the map.
And you can actually go around and do multiplayer-specific, like, raids on bases, like, giant missions. It's essentially almost like an MMO, and that's pretty much just the lobby. And because it's Red Dead and because it's a Rockstar game, it's just fun to get like six, like even like seven people, five people, and just ride around shooting people. Like you're just a band of outlaws, and you can just roll through a town killing everyone.
I remember in a previous 24-hour marathon, that was one of the games, and it was like you just had this huge group of people hanging out and just shooting rustling cattle together.
Yeah, they can shoot each other as well, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And then at one point at the end of the gameplay session, the 24-hour marathon, we were like, all right, the 2 hours is up. We got to switch games. Everybody went on a bridge and jumped off the bridge at the exact same time to their deaths.
But, group suicide.
Yeah. It was good. It was a good close.
Not bad.
Yeah. So that multiplayer ended up being really good and, again, solid single player. And there's no reason to think that Red Dead needed multiplayer.
Like more than solid single player,
yeah.
I'd say.
Number five on the list, XCOM Enemy Unknown. Talk about the single player a little bit, Tom.
Okay. Single player, it's weird. This is one of the games that we talked about so much recently. It's chess with aliens and space marines where you're basically you've got nobody's really a queen. Everybody's more like a rook where you can make movements, hide around, and all of that translates very well to multiplayer because as with chess, like it's all very, you adjust your strategy based on what the other person is doing. You can feign, you can advance and retreat.
And the thing that makes it especially good when it comes to multiplayer, and the multiplayer is essentially the same as the single player in that you're just on this chessboard, is the game does have some flaws. There are some weird camera issues. Sometimes it feels like the AI is cheating. Mm-hmm. But when you're playing multiplayer,
you can't make those excuses.
That's not a thing.
Right.
There's, oh, I got unlucky, but there's no, oh, the AI cheated. He knew I was there. There's, oh, if you're dealing with some shitty camera issues, guess what? So was the opponent.
Right. I mean, this was probably the easiest of the multiplayer modes to make.
Yeah.
Just because it's like, okay, we can actually just wipe out all the AI and put an actual player on the other side of the map and see what they do.
But the turns move a lot faster. It kind of reminded me, like, Civ had multiplayer, too, that Firaxis added, but XCOM moves so much faster than Civ. Like, you're not waiting forever.
Yeah, you can pretty much just have a quick match. Takes a few minutes, unless you get super tactical. And I know over GamesRadar UK's Dave Houghton loves the multiplayer in this. He considers it to be, like, one of the smartest multiplayer modes of games last year. And I don't necessarily disagree. It's much more tactical than really anything else was.
If Dave Houghton likes it, it must be good.
That's fair to say. Or it's Deadly Premonition.
Does he like Deadly Premonition?
He and Henry both love Deadly Premonition.
Wait a minute. I don't love Deadly Premonition.
I thought you loved Deadly Premonition.
I appreciate it.
Deadly Premonition is basically just Twin Peaks, right?
Except bad.
Okay.
But good.
Well, Twin Peaks is kind of bad. There are moments of Twin Peaks that are fairly campy.
I don't know. Somebody asked Dave Houghton on Twitter why that game is good. I don't know. Right. Number four, Max Payne 3. Another game that came out last year.
Mm-hmm.
So
this one I didn't play the multi for you.
Yeah, so Max Payne 3, obviously incredible single player, was one of our top ranked shooters of the year. Rockstar took it over from Remedy. They used to publish it and kind of oversee it, but now it's fully Rockstar made and it has obviously a Rockstar vibe. And the single player is, again, really good. It's better than Red Dead. It's, like I said, at the time, Red Dead was the best shooter that they had made internally, but Max Payne was a better one when it came out.
Well, because Max, like, Red Dead still had to be an open-world game. Max Payne was, Rockstar's like, we're going to make a shooter.
Yeah,
like,
that's, it's
shooting is the point.
As shooter a shooter as you can get. Yeah. And the multiplayer, and the part of the thing that makes the shooting so good is the really, really strong slow-motion segments, which is the entire game. That doesn't translate well over to multiplayer, unless you're a rock star, in which case you develop one of the most confusing compound ways of making it work, and it's brilliant. So the way it works essentially is there's a bunch of different boosts you can – or bursts you can equip, one of which is slow motion. And just like in the game, if you want to do a shoot dodge, you can do it. Anybody that looks at you slows down, so they're in slow motion too. Anybody that looks at somebody who is slowed down – also goes into slow motion.
Wow.
So it's almost like anybody who is a part of that encounter in any way will slow down. But if you're on the opposite side of the map, you're never going to be affected by it. Or even if your back is turned to it, you may not get affected by
it. How often can you activate your slowdown ability?
I think it's based sort of on I haven't played much of it, but I think it was based either – it's based on like the – sort of like kill streaks.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's actually kills or just damage done, but it's like your points lead to it. Also, as Ryan Talgenick has pointed out several times, they had almost the exact same system as everyone freaked out about how good it was in Modern Warfare or Black Ops 2, the pick 10 system, where it's like you don't choose two weapons and three traits. You pick and choose what you want, sort of like a point buy system. And this game had it first earlier in the year. So it beat Black Ops 2 to the punch with that and ended up being a really, really solid multiplayer game that was essentially hanging off the side of an extremely good single-player game. Number three, Uncharted 2 Among Thieves. Another one that people just... like, Uncharted was, like, the definitive single-player game.
Uh-huh.
And to add multiplayer to that was super sacrilegious.
Mm-hmm.
People were not happy. I remember confusion because they didn't know.
When I got it, I just completely ignored it. I was like, eh, I never needed to know what multiplayer is like in this thing. I had a good enough time.
That's actually what I'm finding myself noticing about. Like, the only multiplayer component out of any of these games that I played is Mass Effect 3, and I didn't like it. but I've played, actually, and Dead Space 2, because I'm a coward and don't play scary games. But I have played all of the single player. And
you just ignored the multiplayer?
And I just ignored it.
But like, you're also, with the exception of life-ruining, massively Everquest, multiplayer right. games, you're not a big fan of multiplayer.
That's not fair to say. Because I really like, say, a Call of Duty game where multiplayer is the reason why
sure.
you play that.
But
I don't
you,
know.
But you played a bunch of Halo 4. Did you touch the multiplayer?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I don't know. It's a... it's definitely these preconceived notions that you take into what this game should be or shouldn't be, for me at least, just had me not having, even if this was the best multiplayer component ever created, I probably wouldn't have touched it.
Well, I'll tell you, in Uncharted's case, you missed out.
I did.
Because there were two multiplayer modes. One was, at the time, the most advanced version of a Horde-style multiplayer. It was almost more like Left 4 Dead.
A little, yeah.
Where you and two other players going through a level to find gold, and as you went, you'd fight waves of enemies, and you'd have like specific holdout locations.
Mm-hmm.
Super good. The other mode that I didn't expect to like at all was just like regular deathmatch and team deathmatch, which didn't necessarily have anything gameplay wise. Like they didn't do some weird like I said with like the Max Payne, they found a way to make slow motion work, and that technologically that's impressive. But the thing that made Uncharted's multiplayer so good is just the verticality of it, being able to climb everything. Those levels were, you'd be like, being able to climb, have cover behind something, shoot at somebody. Everything you can do in the single player, you could also do in the multiplayer.
Mm-hmm.
And it made it feel more like a, less like a video game,
right?
Almost sort of what Brink was trying to do and just failed miserably at doing. It did really well.
Yeah, I remember that when I finally did play it, like I had underestimated it. I also, if I ever do play multiplayer games, it's usually on the 360. Just that's where most of my friends are at.
Yeah.
So I don't play on PS3 much. But when I did, I was treating it like Gears when I first started playing and just keeping my feet to the ground and getting behind stuff. And I was losing a lot because people were getting the high ground on me or they were jumping between buildings. And I wasn't ready for that kind of thing.
And then when you play it and you see like, oh, if I run up behind somebody who's on a ledge, I can push them off. Like all these cool things that you should be able to do. It's sort of like how Uncharted was always, if you should, like the cinematic events, like I should be able to control myself while this is happening. And it let you, the multiplayer was sort of like that. It's like, I'm not just going to walk up and like hit somebody in the back and have them die. If they're on a ledge, I'm going to throw them the fuck off.
Right.
So it was just really well made, and that trend continued with Uncharted 3.
Mm-hmm.
Number two on the list, Assassin's Creed Brotherhood, may have had the harshest swing back of any of the games on this list.
I think it might have been. Yeah, on this list, yeah, this was the one I had the most negative reaction to.
Yeah, so obviously it's not a shooter, which unlike, I mean, Dead Space, Red Dead, XCOM, you could kind of make the argument. Max Payne, Uncharted, everything else in this game involves guns.
Mm-hmm.
There's very little shooting, and it's a game about stealth assassinations.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it probably is one of the most inventive multiplayer modes to come out of this generation at all.
Yeah, Ubi found a really smart way to to create a game mode, they had to create something new to really get what the feeling of Assassin's Creed is into a multiplayer mode.
Yeah, and they sort of just, I mean, the way they did it was sort of by blatantly ripping off the ship.
Right. I was just about to say that, which is basically the same thing. You've got a mission, there's like secret
agents. Yeah, you're on a boat, there's a bunch of people, you have to kill a target, and a target has to kill you, but their boat is also full of NPCs, and you don't know who's an NPC
it's
and
really
who's a player.
That the ship didn't take off. Because I was... Obviously.
And then its Kickstarter failed.
Oh, really?
They made the ship 2 full steam ahead, steampunked the ship.
I didn't realize.
It didn't even come close. Oh. I threw like $150 at it.
Wow.
I'm like, I love the ship. I'm like, this game needs to be made. Old? And I think in total, it made $150. Like, it was all me. No one else put money towards it. But
I didn't even realize that was happening.
So. Yeah. I think we wrote about it. Like, no one cared. I think the problem was it's not the original developers of the ship. And the ship itself is already a franchise no one really cares about. Right. And that developer was thrown a bone by Ubisoft when they released Bloody Good Time, which was essentially the ship except XBLA. Mm-hmm. But it was Ubisoft, so they marketed it really, really poorly, so no one knew about it.
Right.
But Assassin's Creed kind of scratches that itch really well, where you have somebody to kill, somebody has to kill you, there's NPCs, and part of the game is sort of tricking other players into thinking you're AI, which is my favorite thing in the world. Like, the idea that gaming has evolved to the point where it's no longer AI trying to act like players. It's AI trying to react like people and players having to try to act like AI. That's so cool to me that we've gotten to that point in gaming.
And also, they underplayed, like, combat. A versus combat in Assassin's Creed almost won't work. Like, it's such a reactive combat system, mm-hmm. especially in the pre-Assassin's Creed 3 stuff. So the killing stroke is just the end in most of those. Like, you just got your kill.
You can sometimes reverse it and run away, but it's not about, like, sword fighting.
No.
And also worth mentioning is how every iteration has gotten better multiplayer. And the newest one, Assassin's Creed 3, has a mode called Wolfpack, where the way they described it that works well is almost like reverse horde mode, where you and three people have to go around killing a bunch of targets around the map at the same time to score points. It's just so cool that they found all these interesting ways to make Assassin's Creed's multiplayer really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's number 2 on the top 7 surprisingly fun multiplayer games inside of single-player games. And number 1!
Mass Effect 3.
Mass Effect 3.
I may have already ruined it.
You did, but it's okay. Mass Effect 3.
If you're listening to this and having not read the top 7, then you did it wrong anyway.
Yeah, unless you're getting your information from here and then you go read it to find out more.
And then you're like, wow.
Tom ruined it.
Tom ruined it. Like every good thing in life.
Seriously. Stupid hair.
God damn that, Tom.
Handsome gentleman. By the way, did you see somebody? I didn't show you this. Somebody on, I was looking through like the people who have tweeted at Radio Radar. By the way, you can follow us on Twitter at GR Radio Radar. And somebody was like, sent a message to Tom saying like, hey, I've always loved you. It's great to listen to you on Radio Radar. You probably didn't get that message, though, because it was directed at Tom McShay.
Oh, nice.
And I was just like...
Tom McShay is a different person.
Yes, he is. Yeah, a different opinionated Tom from GameSpot.
Tom M. from GameSpot. Yeah. The good old...
A different
one. We're a little different. We used to be together on the hotspot.
That must have been super confusing for everyone.
We're really different.
You're both white.
If you get to know us, you'll see how different that we are.
Good news. That's never going to happen.
Yeah.
Mass Effect 3. Again, surprise, another wave-based multiplayer mode. Mm-hmm. And one that doesn't even necessarily add that much to the gameplay, but it was almost like Mass Effect 3's multiplayer was needed to remind us of how strong Mass Effect's gameplay had become. Over the years. I mean, Mass Effect 2 had really, really good shooting, but Mass Effect 3 just kind of pushed that even further to the point where, like, the cover system was really good, and the fact that the cover system led to you being able to climb objects super seamlessly was really good. The regular combat was strong, and the enemy variety in general in Mass Effect had just gotten so insanely good with each game that in Mass Effect 3, they're like, well, let's just make you fight all of them. And it works really well to the point where there's just three different modes, each with you fighting different enemies with different bosses and different big bosses and different types of enemies.
Yeah. I mean, I can't think of a franchise that has evolved its gameplay so dramatically and just made it so much better over the course
of... The only other one I could think of is Assassin's Creed, which is also on the list, because Assassin's Creed 1 was essentially
a parry
tech
game.
Demo.
Mm-hmm.
Not even it was a tech demo for a parry game. And by the time you got to 3, it was that much improved. But Mass Effect 3 is right up there, especially considering
that
how Mass
Effect... Top 7. Top 7 games that have evolved their gameplay.
The most.
The most. Ist. In 2013.
Girl-on-girl kisses.
Also, this is actually where Top 7's come from.
Yep.
With Mass Effect, it was your first chance to play as aliens. Like, you could be the alien races, not just Shepard. And I couldn't believe that I haven't played it, but I had a bunch of friends that played it, and like, it got their hooks into you with the like basically buying a pack of cards for new weapons.
Yeah,
like,
so that's
I
the reason
believe
that
people
this,
got into that.
So here's a fun fact about, I'll say me, but I mean gamers. And this point was actually brought up by PC Gamer's Evan Lottie. The further away you hold our reward for success, the better it feels to get it. So in this case, it's like when you beat a level, you don't get a weapon or an item. You get the money to buy a weapon or an item. Mm-hmm. And then when you're sitting there and they literally took the booster card or the booster pack, like Magic the Gathering style. Hey, it all came full circle.
Can we talk about Magic again?
Later. In terms of you decide which booster pack you want to buy, and then you open it up and you get like seven things. And that mechanic was so rewarding that I ended up spending real money on it.
Really?
Not a lot. Only, I think I spent like $5. But I know people, I think, Evan Lottie, I think he said he spent like a few tens of dollars.
Yeah, in a way, I don't like that. Like, that's the type of Facebook money taking thing that I really hate when they do it. Consumables, I guess.
But here's the thing about it. It is done in such a way, if a game ever makes me feel like I need to spend money to succeed, mm-hmm. I won't. But if it's more of like, I'm good right now, but I kind of want to be a little better, like it has to be fully mm-hmm. functional without microtransactions mm-hmm. for me to consider spending money on it.
Well, that's what most of them do it by doing, like, well, you can get here eventually, or you could just speed this up. Like, you could earn enough money, in-game money, to buy those booster packs, or you could just get those $5.
And the reason it did it well was it was more along the lines of, like, if you beat a level, you'll earn enough to get, like, the second biggest booster pack, and if you beat, like, five levels, you can get the number one. And realistically, that's a really good...
Right.
They're not holding things back from you.
Yeah,
but if you're like, I want to open five at a time right now, so I'm going to spend
$10. I have $1 billion. Yes. Let's open five packs right now.
So that really just... did that really well, and it was right. Obviously, if the gameplay wasn't good, I wouldn't want to have spent money.
And actually, to draw a parallel between me, Magic Cards, and Mass Effect 3, so I went and bought a box of Ravnica. I was trying to tell the story.
Newest Magic set.
The current Magic set. Opened all the packs, and it kind of killed my interest in Magic for a little bit. And I can imagine...
How much is a box?
It's about $100. It was a Christmas present to myself.
No, but I've done that too. But, when you open too many at once, like,
yeah,
it really does.
And I can see the exact same thing happening for Mass Effect 3. So it's almost like there's a if you spend too much money in something like this, it'll backfire.
Yes.
So that's why it's almost better to not spend the money and just wait for the five to come.
Yeah, it's done in a really strong way. The point of this entire exercise is, stop freaking the fuck out when a single-player game gets multiplayer. I mean, you can say BioShock 2's multiplayer was disappointing, but nobody was saying it was bad. It was fine. If you were interested in playing it, it was fine.
And BioShock 2 is still really good.
Yeah.
Spec Ops: The Line, yeah, maybe you
multiplayer,
can make that.
But no, because that team had, like, that single-player was still, nothing bad came of it. That was the perfect example of, like, 2K literally said, we're going to get someone else to, like, give us your assets.
Right.
They'll make the multiplayer. You didn't need to...
Sort of. I mean, I feel like in the case of Spec Ops: The Line, where it's...
It undermines the message.
Right.
But that's the one.
Right.
And that game is still one of the most interesting games to come out last year.
Right.
And that multiplayer being a part of it almost helps it be an interesting game because it adds to the conversation of... what the game was versus...
It's almost an ironic multiplayer.
Yeah, and actually, at one point, there's so much interesting about that game to talk about. Like, you have the, and then you have the producer of the game calling it a cancerous lump on the disc that had no place being part of it. And then you have, like, the game's writer recently admitted on Twitter just about the fact that, like, it was meant to be condemnation, is that the word?
Condemnation
of the genre, like the entire game, and then it has Call of Duty multiplayer. Like, it's so interesting how little it fit on.
Right.
And it was fine. It had some cool ideas. So, no reason to think that any of your single-player games are going to be weaker because of multiplayer. And
wait for the review, maybe.
Yeah, wait for the review on GamesRadar.com.
Multiplayer games in single-player that made us eat crow.
That was one of the names.
That was one of them.
Yes. We were trying to figure out a way to shorten the name. Every name we came up with, double the length.
Yeah.
So that's it for the top seven. You can check out a top seven every Monday on GamesRadar.com. I'll give you a little tease. I don't want to give a full thing, but next week's top seven, which I'm super excited for. It's coming together kind of last minute, but it involves...
We're essentially throwing it together right now.
It's an old idea that I've been really excited to do for a while, and I'm just taking this opportunity to do it. It's about... It involves the history of some of your favorite games that you might not have known about.
What are some of those games?
I'll give a recent example...
Just give me the name
a good
of the
example.
Game.
A game like Dead Space, something about its history you might not have known.
What, one more. See if they can put together the dots.
I'll give one that really makes it really obvious.
No, don't do that.
Okay. Doom.
Doom.
Doom and Dead Space.
What is the connection? That is the.
That question
be,
of the
yeah,
week.
Yeah, that could be the question of the week.
That's not the question of the week.
No?
No.
I thought that was a pretty good question of the
no,
week.
No, because then people are going to stop guessing on Monday when the top seven goes live. We got another question. I have a question of the week ready. You don't worry. Don't worry your pretty little head. It's a very pretty head, by the way. Mainly your hair. It's nice. It pops up a little in the front. How long do you spend on that every day?
I spend about 3 seconds to do... I'll show you real quick.
Okay.
So when I come out of the shower,
okay.
It's all like slicked back.
Naturally.
That's, you know,
yeah.
What I do. And then I go like
push
this,
it all down.
And I go like this.
And then you brush it to the side.
And then I do this.
Oh, you do a thing. So here's what he's doing. He's putting his fingers through the front of his hair.
Yeah.
The hair that I will not have for much longer because I'm balding. Pulls it together and then puffs it straight up.
Yeah.
Imagine how Cloud would do his hair. That's how Tom Agrino does his hair.
Occasionally, I'll go further back because...
You condition?
No.
No? You're...
No, my hair care regimen is baking soda followed by apple cider vinegar.
You are literally the biggest hippie in this room
I
right
do
now.
That once
did
a
you,
week.
Did you know he lives in Berkeley, California?
I do live in Berkeley, yes. California. washing my hair cost me about... $1.25 a month, and it's cheap as shit.
You can go ahead and pretend that it's a money thing.
My hair looks fine.
It does. I can't deny that.
I haven't gotten a haircut since before E3.
The funny thing is you keep every weekend, you'll take that awful orange hat you have,
mm-hmm.
put it on backwards, look around the room like we're all judging you, and then go, I know, I need to get a haircut.
I know.
It's just too long. I'm getting one this weekend, I swear. And then you come in the next week, put on the orange hat.
I know, because it starts to strain my eyes to read through my hair, and I get tired of moving my hair out of the
way. Oh, I thought
you
just like the Giants.
No, now I'm okay with
Didn't
them.
Did you win that hat?
Yeah, I won, yeah. But I don't like wearing hats in general. Like,
you should wear a hairband.
Oh, do-rag. Do-rag it up. What are those, like, a handkerchief that you tie around? And then...
Yeah, like Marcus Phoenix.
You should do that.
Mm.
I
really will get a haircut this weekend. I was going to get it the first day.
Where do you go to get your haircut?
There's a place called World Cuts, pretty close to the campus, which does a good cheap haircut, but it's not.
So if you swing by World Cuts this weekend, you may see Hank getting his haircut.
No?
But anyway, I meant to get it. A quick haircut story. I meant to get it before.
I love this.
The day before work.
Go ahead, I'm writing that down for the name of the podcast.
Quick
haircut
story. I meant to get it the day before we came back to work, so I could be like, "Hey, everybody, got a haircut. New year," and
like
then,
me and Sophia and
yeah, like everybody else did. And
it's
but
just
then
what you do, you got time off.
Yeah, but then I put it off until New Year's Day, not thinking, oh, places are closed.
Yeah,
on New Year's
people
Day.
Don't like working on New Year's.
So then I walked all the way to the haircut place and then walked back in shame without a haircut.
I'm not even gonna give that the. I'm not even gonna give that a cool story, bro.
Okay.
I'm gonna give it a great story, man.
Because
I'm now I understand the I understand how hard it is to be Henry Gilbert.
Oh,
and I think we all do. So we'll be right back. We have a ton of news stories, including three new console announcements that came out of CES. A bunch of console announcements that came out of CES and reviews. So stay tuned. And we're back. Segment 2 of Radio Radar, episode 21. Like we said, we're going to have a review a little later of Fire Emblem. We'll have a preview of Fire Emblem
mm-hmm.
in a few minutes and a review of Anarchy Reigns a little later in the show. But let's jump right into news. Tom, you want to take over news in this case? Because I know you have read more of these than I have.
Have I now?
Yeah.
I don't think that's true. But I will talk about Biden meets with game representatives about violence.
Mm.
As some people
tricky
know,
topic.
Yeah, I mean, so in the aftermath of that Sandy Hook Elementary shooting, one of the things that has come up, I guess, is games being roped into, you know, this is why it happened. It's totally video games. This guy was playing, what, Call of Duty, or I don't even know if they said
I feel like the
that he
Call,
was playing.
He was a Call of Duty player.
Oh, like 100 million other people.
100 yes. million other people happened to play Call of Duty, and games like, Bulletstorm
and Mortal Kombat and Splatterhouse.
And watching movies like Natural Born Killers and, what was the other movie?
Slaughterhouse, I think.
No, Natural Born Killers and, I don't know. Oh, American Psycho.
Yes.
Excellent movie, by the way. Excellent Pokemon parody, yes. by the way.
American Psycho is only good if you get the fucking subversion to it. That it's not, don't take it at face value, guys.
Does
it's,
anybody?
I didn't think
ending,
that
the end
until.
End of the movie completely comes out and says that.
I didn't think people took it at face value until I was at a Halloween party and people put that movie on. And then half the dudes there were like, he's such a badass, man. Oh, man, what a cool guy. I was like.
You also actually are a sociopath.
Yeah.
You just diagnosed yourself.
It's a sociopath test.
It's also great if you take it as a prequel to Batman Begins.
That is true.
Especially, yeah, it becomes real good.
Anyway, so games have been roped into it.
It's also great if you just try to reenact all those things he does in the movie in real
right.
life.
Right. Especially that coat hanger scene.
Yes.
Oh, boy.
God, don't do that to any. No.
Games Radar disclaimer. Don't do that.
Don't do that. The sledgehammer thing I can get behind. Anyway.
And biting a hooker's leg. That's completely fair game.
Where were we? Oh, right. Sandy Hook Elementary tragedy.
I was talking about biting a hooker's leg. So the answer was obviously Joe Biden.
Right. Joe Biden. So the
guy eats a hooker a week, by the way.
Right. He does beat a hooker a week. Did you say eat or
beat? I said eat, actually. Oh,
I heard beat.
He's a cannibal.
Yeah.
Our vice president's a cannibal.
He'll eat them and then.
So Joe Biden met with game representatives.
Eat them.
He wants to, right?
He did that this week as part of the gun violence, I forget the actual name of
task
the
force,
task
I think.
Force. So he's meeting with representatives of the entertainment industry, including games and movies, as well as like the NRA and retailers like Walmart.
Do books have a...
No one reads books in America.
I know, but is there like an organization that represents books?
The Publishers Association of something or
other? Are they going?
I don't think so. No one blames books anymore.
Yeah, when novels initially came out, they were just like video games and
But when John Lennon was shot, the guy had a book with him. This guy didn't have a copy of Call of Duty. I'm just saying books.
No, they're very subversive. He had Catcher in the Rye.
Yep. I fucking hate that book.
Really?
Yeah, I'm not a fan.
I just recently read it, and I liked it a lot. I feel like if I would have read it when I was 16, I would have not liked it a lot.
That's when I read it.
Yeah. I feel like that's a big problem with the way that we are exposed to literature when we're in high school. Because 16-year-old kids do not have enough life experience to really get something like Catcher.
Yeah, and I think the idea is like, oh, he's like 16. You'll sympathize with him. But at 16, we're also not sympathetic.
Right. You like, have to be actually 30 years old to understand Nick. What is it?
Holden Caulfield.
Holden Caulfield.
He's kind of a douche, though.
He is.
Like, he's not a douche.
Motherfucking galoshes. That's all I remember. His, like, friend borrowed his... That's all I fucking remember from that book.
That wasn't assigned to me in high school. We read a separate piece.
Anyway. Joe Biden has this task force. So basically, he's getting... So as part of the NRA's response to the Sandy Hook Elementary, their response is to get people to not be talking about regulating guns and gun control. So obviously the way you do that is to throw other industries and everything else under the bus.
The easiest way to get people to not want to get rid of one amendment is to throw another one under the bus.
Right. And so games have been roped into this conversation. Movies are always all the hippity hop, I'm sure, is in there somewhere.
It's every time. This happens every time.
Right. And so essentially it sounds like with, you know, Joe Biden being like, all right, let's talk to folks, is essentially talking to everyone and presumably... Out of that, he'll have some better understanding of who is actually to blame and or steps that can be taken, regulatory steps that can be taken, incremental regulatory steps that can be taken to curb, you know, gun violence. So in short, like I'm currently writing an editorial that is I've been currently writing for the past week.
I started working on one, too, about it.
Really?
Yeah.
Cooper doesn't understand mine.
I do not.
I feel like it's understandable. And I think I'm just going to post it. And
that's within your rights.
You can effing deal.
That's fine.
Because I have looked that over. It does make 100% logical sense. The argument I'm making,
I'm sure every one of our readers
will have no idea what
it's talking about. Going to love it.
Basically, the argument that I'm making is like us talking about games as it relates to the Sandy Hook Elementary shooting or mental health or gun control. All of that stuff is basically a sideshow for what we should actually be talking about, like the actual incremental things that need to be put into place that probably encompasses all of the things that have been mentioned, be it, you know, semi-automatics being available to anybody on the streets or just like the glorification of violence in entertainment, be it video games or movie music, or, you know, just the way we treat people with mental illness in this country. All of that stuff, there are things that can be addressed so that, you know, some kind of mass shooting doesn't happen. Right now, what we're getting is, especially in the media at large, people, not really people like us, because it's not really our place to be writing about that kind of thing. But places like
entertainment news organizations.
Yeah, entertainment news organizations. Real news organizations, though, who are actually covering, like taking serious somebody saying, man, I can't believe, like, so Coop and I and Lucas and Lorenzo were getting some cheesesteaks.
As we often do.
And they were showing like a rerun of Piers Morgan talking to Alex Jones, who's just like this.
He's a conservative radio host.
Yeah. And
Is he the one who says that FEMA has.
Yeah. I mean, it's
people.
His job to say he's a shock
guy. That guy's a goof.
Yes, yeah.
So he comes on the TV and like it was just the entire. I don't know. Maybe it was just me. I just felt extremely uncomfortable and it was very derailing for me.
No, yeah. It was an uncomfortable thing.
Right. So. To have that guy, and that guy is basically just a mouthpiece for the NRA in many ways. Like he's saying, we shouldn't be talking about gun violence or gun control as a part of gun violence, because part of the message that I am, you know, charged with putting out there is we actually want to be selling more guns and not less guns. And a way to do that, because you're not going to be able to make the argument of you know, we actually need more guns on the streets when you've got 20 dead kids on your hand.
Right.
The way to do that is to point fingers at somebody else, which is a very manipulative thing to do on the NRA's part and something that CNN should have seen for what it is, instead of having that guy on the show and hoping that he did exactly what he did and then that story blowing up in the media.
I think the point of that is one, the wanting to have the perception of balance. You just say, well, this side says this and this side says this. Let's
talk. But that's not even having a perception of balance.
I know.
It's not being put forth in good faith that that's actually what should be, is the actual cause.
It's really weird. They're talking to Alex Jones, who like is a 9/11 conspiracy theorist as well. And he's really.
And it's not even just that. That instance, like you're seeing all sorts of various, like it was very, very disheartening for me to see, especially the immediate response to that shooting, where basically every bit of information that came out in the first 24 hours was inaccurate, aside from the name of the school.
Yes.
And the reason why that happened was because the real media, the media that should be, you know, diligently checking their sources and knowing what to trust and what not to trust, they approached that situation as we would approach, as Games Radar would approach a convention like CES and an announcement like Project Shield, where for us, it's like...
It's okay if we fuck up.
Yeah, it's okay if we fuck
up. It's speculation.
At the end of the day, like, Project Shield's still coming out. It might have 5 buttons instead of 4 buttons, but, you know, it's like part of the fun, part of the entertainment of Project Shield being announced is... You know, all of the crazy stuff, all of the possibilities may or may not be true, but it's fun to talk about as if it might be true. If you carry that standard over to things that actually matter, where you're reporting inaccuracies and derailing the conversation, then you're preventing, like the worst case scenario for us is we get something wrong about how many buttons Project Shield is. If the worst case scenario for, you know, the media or main primary press organizations applying this same standard to a story that actually matters is you continue to have people like this guy going and killing a bunch of people.
So with the specifically with the Biden thing, I've been like on my idea of it has changed. I kind of thought, yeah, we should be part of the and by we, I don't mean actually me, but games should be part of the conversation. If they're going to be accused of inspiring violence, then the people should be part of that talk with Biden. Mm-hmm. Like they
no,
should
that's
be able to defend
true.
Themselves.
Like that is a conversation that is actually productive be taking mm-hmm. place. Like they actually need to be talking to experts in the realm of video games to have like an actual idea of what ways could this be impacting society. So that's wholly valid, but they're not doing it to get like the federal government doesn't need page views. They need accurate information, and to get accurate information, you go to experts in the field.
Well, now do feel the game, even going this thing, like, is useless just because I feel like every political task force, especially when called together by the vice president, which is, as John Adams called it, a useless office, is like, it won't actually yield results. And I read an interesting article on The Atlantic today written by Ian Bolgost or Bolgost. He's written a ton about games.
Bolgost,
yeah. His point was that, like, to be included in this specific thing, mm-hmm. to talk with it, is to admit fault, is almost admitting fault. Like, the NRA makes you one of the people they blame.
Right.
And then so Biden invites you because you're named there, and then you show up.
It's not to admit fault, but it's definitely to recognize the possibility of culpability, mm-hmm. which totally, I feel like, is a valid conversation to have.
So on that same note, the editorial that I'm working on that may or may not end up going up is sort of averse to what you're saying mm-hmm. But not exactly. It's more along the idea of you know how somebody wrote that editorial, like, I am Adam Lanza's mom, which was essentially about how, like, I am somebody else in a similar situation. I have a child that could end up doing that. Mm-hmm. Mine's more, I am Alex Jones, in that if I am a responsible video game owner, and if the government, and if Piers Morgan said, I think we need to get rid of video games, I'd probably be on his show yelling at him and calling him an asshole and saying he should be deported.
I can see.
Because it really – because over the break, I ended up almost getting in a yelling match with a friend's mom when she blamed video games for this. And I realized that, not to say slippery slope or anything like that, but we are only a few steps away. It's only a matter of time, and it could happen that – all of a sudden something happens and people are like, you know what, it is video games, and then everyone turns on games. And if that happens, all of the arguments the NRA and gun owners in general are using are pretty much very similar arguments that we'd have to be using. Mm-hmm. And it kind of makes me sympathetic, not in terms of sympathetic like we should let them do what they want, but I understand why they're reacting the way they're reacting, because if I was a responsible gun owner and somebody said there was a shooting, so we're taking away your gun. I'm flipping that to if there was a shooting and somebody said he was a gamer, we're taking away your games. My mindset is, so you're saying that I'm going to kill people.
Yeah. Like I mean, there's a bit of a logical fallacy in there, just in that a gun is actually like a primary
way. Oh, I know that, but they're saying that if they're saying games and caused somebody to want to kill people,
right?
So we're taking your games away. It's you saying that I don't have the capability of playing games responsibly, right, or being a responsible person. And I could see how.
And I suppose I feel like we're not actually just a few steps away from that happening, just because the way the Constitution is set up, like, stuff like games are actually protected. And, you know, we had that Supreme Court case that essentially affirmed that.
Sure, but so are guns.
Well, yes, but there is a difference between, like, a primary and a secondary kind of thing.
They're both
thing that can be used. Implement tool, I guess.
Personally, but I don't like when video games...
I mean, there's a difference between the physical, tangible... I can use this gun.
Oh, I know. I'm just saying that I'm not, it's not like, oh my God, I'm worried. I'm just saying that if it ever came to that,
right,
all of the excuses that I'm hearing from NRA members are the same excuses that is the only excuses we'd be able to use.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess what a better way to put that would be, there's the actual crime, and then there's like the idea of a thought crime, and the thought crime is what would fall, what games would fall under.
Sure.
And the actual crime is what.
That's true, but well, I'm still.
This is why I would empathize with LaPierre. Is that the guy, the NRA representative who spoke? That, you know, my response a lot of the times to people saying, like, well, games is a problem, we should regulate games more. What should we do? My knee-jerk reaction is say, it needs no regulation, leave it alone. Like, this is not the problem. I want no change to the thing I like. And I do feel like that was Pierre's response, LaPierre's response, too. It was just, no, you're trying to blame guns. They're not the problem. I accept no compromise because they're not the problem.
Which, yeah, so
that's the same mindset I can get in when people start to blame.
That's essentially what I'm saying. It's like, I, for as much as like when it happened, I immediately started making fun of him, and he still said things that I don't agree with. And same with Alex Jones, who, I mean, obviously came across like a raving lunatic because he's a sensationalist raving lunatic. But at the same time, as time passes and as I talk to like family members that are like, you know, maybe there is something to, maybe it is video games, I start to realize that, like,
your immediate response is to go into a defensive position.
And that's why they, and it's not, and like you said, it's not, well, yeah, maybe we should talk and find a compromise. It's like, no, because if I say that, then I'm saying that it's possible that there, I know it's not possible because I'm not going to kill someone.
Right.
So
you can't give any ground whatsoever.
Because if you give them an inch and they'll take all of your video games.
All of them.
So that's why I'm saying, I'm not saying that I agree with the NRA's stance on anything. I'm just saying I 100% understand why it's the stance they're taking and sympathize with them because, I mean, for a lot of people, that's their hobby, if nothing else. It's their hobby and it's their constitutional right.
And their business.
Whether or not we should take it away is a different question. I'm not even saying that. I'm just saying I understand that because I feel the same way about games that they do about guns.
Right. So.
So.
In short, Joe Biden beats hookers.
And eats them.
And eats them.
Allegedly.
Beats and eats.
Allegedly. We don't want
to.
It's not
to a, right. We don't want. A
on the lighter
service.
Side
Moving
of the news.
Moving on to a lighter topic. Pokemon X and Y was announced. This Woo, is the kind of stuff that I would rather talk about.
Yes.
Dead kids. That's
fun fact. This is probably the end. Unless something happens, this is probably the last we'll talk about that issue on the podcast.
Probably.
Pokemon X and Y. So there was a Nintendo called us, or it was known. Nintendo, it was like, okay, there's going to be a press conference, 3 a.m. Pacific. Henry and I both set our alarms for 3 a.m. I, at the last minute, said, fuck that, and turned my alarm off. 3:01, I fucking shot up out of bed anyway. Like, my body was like, somewhere there's Pokemon being talked about. Like, literally, my phone was off, and I just leapt out of bed. Like, I need to be involved.
In case you're not aware, anxiety runs deep in Jonathan Cooper.
It sure does.
Well, now I also, I had to know. I just couldn't stand the idea of someone knowing when I didn't know, just because I was asleep. Before it was announced, like they said, 3 a.m. Pokemon thing, international announcement, and at least personally, I thought you fooled me too many times, Pokemon, by saying you're going to have a big new announcement, and it's a spinoff that I don't care about. It won't be a new generation on the next.
And then there
system.
was that rumor going around that it was Pokemon Rainbow, and the description sounded terrible. Uh-huh. It's like it's essentially like, yeah, we already made a sequel to Black and White. No, it was Go Nintendo, but GameSpot popularized it, and it was like there's going to be 20 new Pokemon. And that's literally it. And I was like, fuck, I'm going to be so angry. That's one of the reasons I turned my alarm off. I was like, it's probably just Pokemon Rainbow.
Yeah.
Fuck that. But Pokemon X and Y, a full new Pokemon generation. Sixth gen on the 3DS, which I actually got into another argument. I get into a lot of arguments.
Yeah, you do.
Only on the internet, not in real life. Fuck everyone. fuck you. Till you say it in arguments, I'll fucking...
You tend to argue.
I do. I genuinely try not to, but...
Really?
But everyone's wrong, and I have to let them know.
Why fight your nature?
Exactly. I got into an argument with somebody because they're like, Nintendo just become pretty much just Apple at this point. Why don't they release it on the system, the old systems that people have? And it's like, do you realize how big... Besides the 3D bullshit that I love... How big of a leap up the 3DS is technologically from the DS?
I don't feel like most people do.
They don't. I think it's the same problem they're running into with the Wii U. It's like, why? It's just a new controller for the Wii.
People don't get stuff they ought
to. Well, and Nintendo needs to rebrand their shit.
Right.
New and finally full 3D Pokemon.
Fully 3D. It's like the leap from Dragon Quest VII to Dragon Quest VIII. Like, it's no more top-down. No more sprites in the fight, in the battles. Like, the battles remind me of the
Pokemon
Battle
Stadiums.
Coliseum.
Yeah.
Did you ever play that Spectrobes game?
Yeah, I did. It was cool. It's all right.
Something like this?
Yeah. It's, if you've played any of the Pokemon, Nintendo has made like four at this point games where you just fight 3D Pokemon, and that's what this looks like. Like every Pokemon modeled in 3D, all of their moves in 3D, the world in 3D. Even when you go find when it says like a wild Pokemon appears, you actually have like grass in 3D rustling, and then a Pokemon jumps out of it. Like full presentation overhaul.
And also the two main characters look totally different. The boy and the girl, totally
it's a
different.
Guy with also awful sunglasses and a girl who looks like she's dressed like Carmen Sandiego.
I actually like it. The boy still looks like he's cut from the same cloth as Ash and Red and all that. But the girl looks different enough. I think I'd rather play as her this time.
It's interesting. But yeah, they.
The starters. It's. I only remember the one
Chespin.
I'm going to be. Yeah,
Chespin, who is a grass and maybe dark type. There are some rumors floating around that people, if you look at the moves they're doing, it looks like they have alternate moves.
Yeah, it seemed very specifically chosen to show alternate attacks, non-first
type. Some people
attacks.
Are saying that it could just be like growl, which is possible, but it looks like. So Chespin is one.
Fennekin,
which is a Fennec fox. It's also a fire fox.
The fire fox.
A psychic Pokemon. Mm-hmm. And then there's Froakie, who is a water, and then he does a very fighting move looking thing. And they all look awesome.
They all look awesome, but Fennekin is my... I almost always pick a fire type as my original starter, but Fennekin does look the coolest. I think Froakie has a goofy face. And
I'm excited to play as Froakie. He's the least interesting looking one.
Well, he also has just like weird fur or something.
He's sort of awful looking, and I love him.
I like how Chespin is the grass type, but it's really like a chipmunk wearing a green hat.
It's the best thing ever. So yeah, it's coming out in October. We wrote an article with like 40 things from the trailer you could have missed, or 30 something.
It's about 28.
28 things from the trailer you could have missed. Well, some of them have a few things in them.
Oh, okay.
With a lot of things from the trailer you could have missed. So I'm really excited.
I'm super stoked. And, the last big part of the news was that it's got an international launch date. For the longest time, Japan would get Pokemon at least 6 months, like a year before America would. This time, same day, well, they didn't say same day, but same launch at the very least, in October, it'll be out everywhere.
Yes, and there's news already on the legendaries. We know a good amount about it, and you can check out the trailer and a video breakdown of the trailer on GamesRadar.com. Other big news story, the PS3 has allegedly surpassed the Xbox 360 in lifetime sales.
There's no way that's recent.
Worldwide
lifetime sales.
That's totally not recent. That happened a long time ago.
Well, we just posted it, so you should probably talk to our news freelancer.
Happened in September of 2012, I think.
Really?
Yeah. The end of the fiscal quarter of September 30th, 2012.
Well, now is... I think the NPDs came out a few days ago. According to NPD.
Okay. I feel like NPD saw that one.
But the 360 is still ahead in America, and the Sony just surpasses it in Europe and Japan.
PlayStation 3 is huge in Europe. Japan is a small... comparably small
Nintendo
market.
Technically like runs Japan, like well, they're the, I mean, the king the, of Japan, but
if even if you get every single person in Japan to buy your system, that's still just like,
and that's what Nintendo does.
That's a fraction. That's like
that'll be 20 million sales as opposed to 100 million you could get in America,
right?
But yeah, it's still an interesting story, and I mean the software sales don't line up with that at all,
right?
Which is just proof the PS3 is still the best Blu-ray player you can buy.
And the Xbox 360 has that first mover's advantage where it's like, oh, I mean, as you were saying earlier, all my friends are on the 360, so I'm going to, if I have a chance to buy a multi-platform game, I'm going to buy the Xbox version.
Exactly.
It's just...
And I want those achievements. I want achievements, not trophies.
I think an iPhone game just came out that has achievements, by the way.
The first one ever, yes. It was where it's this goofy thing. It's on my Windows phone as well. It's called Wordly or Wordsmith.
Is it good?
And it's okay. I don't know. It's totally just a Facebook game.
Achievements.
Yeah.
Other big news story. The first Steambox sort of
thing
was announced. It's called Piston, I believe. It's essentially a little cube that is a fairly good gaming computer.
And we're fairly certain that this is not the actual
Valve said, like, you can call that a Steambox, but Valve finally talked more about the Steambox. Did an interview with Verge, and he talked about the fact that their Steambox will run on Linux, which Soon after that.
What is that?
But then soon after that, somebody else high up at Valve said that that may not be true. The more that they talk about the Steam Box, the more that it's revealed that it is still really early in development.
Yeah.
No matter, like, and also from talk, I got into some Twitter arguments.
Uh-huh.
I need to stop arguing with people.
You argue a lot.
Never mind. I'm going to keep doing it.
Okay. If you repress it, you'll just become very unhappy.
Yeah. And who wants that?
Nobody.
We already have you.
I know.
We don't need another one.
I am a testament to repression.
Yeah. So the more I talk to people about the Steam Box, I realize that maybe the reason that Valve's holding off is because what people want from the Steam Box is an impossibility.
Uh-huh.
People essentially are asking for a gaming computer for $300.
A $1,000 computer for $300.
And some people are saying, like, well, it can be as powerful as the Xbox 360 and still run most games. And it's like, why is Valve going to make a console that can't run Far Cry 3 at the best settings? Or why? Or that won't be able to run games in 2 years? It's dating itself. And like, why would they do that is sort of the thing. I mean, and from them, it makes more sense for them to do a streaming service that lets you stream either cloud-based or from your PC.
Right.
But yeah, there you can read the full interview on The Verge. Another big story, I'd say a more important story, is Project Shield was revealed. Mm-hmm. NVIDIA did that thing at a press conference where they're like, we have something that you don't know about, and which everyone usually says that's bullshit, we know about everything. Mm-hmm. But they kept this under wraps. Project Shield is essentially an Xbox 360 controller with a big LCD screen on it.
Uh-huh.
That can play Android games and, more importantly, though they downplayed it, stream from your PC to the device while you're within the same Wi-Fi zone and there's an HDMI out. So you can just plug it into your TV and play Steam games from your PC
through a controller
on your TV.
An HDMI out port on a handheld.
Yes.
That's crazy.
Wow. Wi-Fi to a handheld and an HDMI out to your TV.
Yes.
I mean, this is like, if we were to sit down and be like, all right, what do we want from a handheld? We would just have Project Shield.
Yeah, except for the fact that it would probably play PC games and not Android games.
Yeah.
But right. Still, that's really...
No, I mean, well, isn't that the whole thing where you can play the PC games, like stream them to your handheld?
Only if you're in the house.
Well.
The Android
not
is...
Not bad.
No, it's still cool.
Yeah.
They haven't announced a price. It's probably going to be super expensive.
Probably. It's got that new Tegra 4 processor. Which,
I mean, it shouldn't be much more money. It should, realistically, I'm going to say...
$400.
I was going to say $600, because if you buy the best Android outside of contract, you're looking at $500, $600, and that doesn't have this big of a screen.
Right. But do you think that they recognize that gamers won't pay that for a dedicated...
Yes. Yeah. So they may end up doing 5 or 4. Either way, it's like, I actually, the way my apartment is set up, this is a completely useless product to me, and I still might buy one.
And,
because your walls get in the way of the Wi-Fi, is that?
No, it's because my TV is close enough to my computer that I actually already have an HDMI cable. I have an HDMI cable that goes under the, like, I have the perfect setup for Valve Steam Big Picture mode already.
So we were talking about this. This isn't good for you because your fiance plays video games, or at least continences.
Yeah,
you,
yeah. So if I need to use the TV to play a video game, she'll go play FTL or something.
Whereas my wife does not get into video games and insists that I watch terrible TV with
her. So for you, this is literally
this is
the best thing ever.
The best thing in the world.
And they said it's coming out early 2013.
Yeah.
So, which I don't necessarily trust. But I think maybe the idea is they want to get it out before E3.
Uh-huh.
Mm, yeah.
And the hands-ons have been positive. They're saying it's really good. I'm actually kind of, I know this sounds ridiculous, but I'm hoping that there's a way to, like, take off the screen.
Okay.
Because if you, let's say, end up using it a majority of the time for HDMI out to your TV playing Steam games or something... You don't want
that's pretty
it's a heavier.
Yeah, I want. Yeah, my question would be how much or how heavy is this?
You have to imagine it's at least as heavy as like two Vitas, like a Vita on top of your Xbox controller.
Maybe.
But either way, it's super cool. We have an article explaining all the cool news, everything you need to know about it, and it's actually there's a lot of information. It also has like really they talked for a while about how like they went really far out of their way to give it a really good sound system.
Uh-huh. Mm.
So. Looks exciting.
The one thing I will notice is the controller kind of looks like an original Xbox controller.
It's a little big. It's a little
looks
big.
Like
it's
the
big.
Duke.
It's pretty,
sort of dukish.
Pretty hefty. So that could be an issue.
But still really cool. It's cooler. Like, the more they talked about it, there was, like, every so often there'd be a caveat because they're like, it only plays Android games, and that kind of sucks.
Yeah.
Because there's already going to be, like, 17 Android-powered things. But the fact that you can stream from your computer, like, there are so many possibilities for this thing.
This was a more productive CES for video game news than I expected it to be.
Yeah, Android is essentially becoming what Linux has always tried to be. In terms of, like, you don't want to build your game on Windows because it's super complicated, blah, blah, blah. But build them on Android, and you can be on phones, you can be on this console, you can be on tablets. Like, no one's doing Linux stuff except for, apparently, Gabe Newell wants to. But everyone seems to be doing Android stuff.
Yeah.
So we'll see where that goes. Maybe that's their way of beating Apple, is making Android on everything else.
It's possible.
And the other big news story.
I just decided that I'm going to buy this thing.
I can see that in your eyes. Well, considering you just spent $100 on Magic cards you
didn't
need.
That.
The what you'll spend money on has no bearing on just necessity.
Yeah, or have a rational route in reality.
No, but honestly, you have. They said the battery life's like 5 hours, and they also hinted. So remember when it technically works, even though it doesn't work well, that you can play PS3 games on your PSP over the internet if the disc is in your console. Mm-hmm. That's a thing you can sort of do. They hinted that that might happen. That might come to this, where if you're 1,000 miles away with a good Wi-Fi signal and your computer's hooked to the internet, you could play your Steam games. That's the coolest thing ever, if it ever happens. And honestly, it doesn't seem like it should be that far away, like a year or two.
Especially if it's a game that doesn't, like, it's not a shooter and you're not playing multiplayer arenas.
Yeah, it should be a little lag's
okay. If you're playing The Witcher 2. Then a little lag is going to be fine.
A little tiny bit, yeah. Also, big news, the 10 best-selling games of 2012.
Just to run through it real quick.
Were announced, and I think they're all sequels. Yeah, can you run through them?
Call of Duty Black Ops 2, and these are multi-platform, by the way.
Yeah, this is number 1
to 10.
Combined multi-platform sales. Call of Black Ops 2. Madden NFL 13, and this is the U.S.
Genuinely higher than I expected. I thought that was just going to eventually slow down.
Apparently,
I was wrong.
People like their
people once they're Madden,
a broad audience, and I think it's Madden because it's U.S. If it were not U.S., it'd probably be FIFA
right
there. Number 3, Halo 4, which surprised. I mean, that one's a single platform, obviously.
Yeah.
Whereas everything else is multi. Number 4, Assassin's Creed 3.
Looks like quality isn't as important to the Assassin's Creed formula as we all thought it was.
I bet it could have been in, like, number 3, though, if it had been just a little bit better.
It was fine.
And then something that is interesting from a industry dynamic standpoint, Just Dance 4, the casual game, nowhere near the top.
But that's still pretty
high. Five's pretty good.
Five's pretty good considering everyone has said rhythm games and dancing games are dead.
Uh-huh.
And hey, this one's on the top five.
How about that? Ubisoft having 2 in the top 5.
Yeah.
I'd say what's more interesting about the Just Dance thing is that the 360 and PS3 versions outsold the Wii and Wii U ones that have always been such a huge seller on the Wii. And now that it's multi-platform, it's the 360 and PS3 both outdid it.
Yeah. That might be... Well, it could be an installed base issue.
Probably.
Obviously, the 360 and PS3 are going to look better. They're basically the same price at this point. NBA 2K13, number 6.
And number 7 is the closest thing, I'll say, to a to an original IP.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm surprised that Borderlands 2 is high as it is on this list.
Yeah.
Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3, still big seller in 2012.
Sitting at number 8.
Sitting at number 8, Lego Batman 2, DC Super Heroes on every platform known to man. And then you got FIFA Soccer 13 rounding out top 10.
Yes. And real quick, like a minute preview of Fire Emblem, because it's coming out soon enough.
Yeah. Fire Emblem, I finally played it this week. It comes out in like 3 weeks. Nintendo has been very cagey about showing it for some reason. But it's tons of fun. I played it. The combat, the strategy, turn-based strategy combat is just as good as it always was. You're on a grid-based map, moving around, taking attacks. I've been a big Fire Emblem fan, and it still speaks to me. But they put in a bunch of new modes to make it a lot more palatable to non-Fire Emblem geeks, such as no matter what difficulty you put it on, you can turn off permanent character death and the inability to save during battles, but it's still there if you want to be real like me and keep it on. The story is told a lot better, too. Like, it's not just talking heads over a static background. It's, three-dimensional dudes talking, polygonal characters, CG, cutscenes. It's a real step forward for the series.
Awesome. And you can read the preview on GamesRadar.com.
That's right.
Awesome. So we will be right back with a review of Anarchy Reigns and the question of the week. Welcome back to segment three. Joining us now is Lucas Sullivan.
What's up,
fresh out of the bathroom?
Yes, literally.
How'd that go?
Well, my body didn't enjoy being rushed, and it fought back a little, and I was like, come on, man, we gotta be on this podcast.
We don't have time for this!
Jesus.
Get it in line, buddy! Get it in line!
Speaking!
Cope nice suggested that you take off your shirt, which apparently makes it easier.
This conversation feels good after our gun debate.
Speaking of shit, Anarchy Reigns review.
Whoa.
Just kidding. How is Anarchy Reigns? I'll let you know, while you were playing it, everyone in the office at one point walked over and watched you play it.
And said, this looks dumb. And I was like, no, it's fun, I'm telling you.
So what is Anarchy Reigns?
So basically, you take the cast of Mad World for the Wii, which people liked, even though it didn't sell all the great.
The few people that played people it, that myself included, it. Liked
they
it.
Liked it.
You put those characters in color, you tone down the violence, and you make the game a multiplayer beat-em-up, and that is Anarchy Reigns.
So that sounds... If you like the first game, like just complete anathema to that first game. Because that first game was all style, it was all gore.
So this is like, this is basically if you love Platinum games, then you should buy this game. $30, you'll be happy with your investment.
It seems like it's one of the first games they ever did that's like a tribute to themselves. Like
almost, yeah. It's just
way really referential.
It is quite over the top, as they are known to do, but... The gameplay itself is something that it hasn't really been done successfully before, so...
The hit the A button repeatedly?
Well, the combat's pretty simple. You basically just mash X or Y if you're playing on Xbox, and you'll do some pretty crazy things. Slice people up with chainsaws and special weapons and such.
Et cetera, et cetera.
But the single player, pretty fun while it lasts. It's only about 5 hours. The multiplayer could have been awesome... But I did not have a good experience with it.
It sounds chaotic.
It's basically the feeling of if you're playing like MMO PvP and there's just a mosh pit of people and you can't tell what's going on and you run in and just
you start
die.
Hitting buttons is and there, you hope that you get like a kill.
Yeah, and then...
Is there any indication that some semblance of order could be imposed on it? Or
so I think like if people put their mind to it and want to get really good. Like I played a match with a guy who went 10-0. And he was just tearing it up. And the way the dodge system works, if you're good enough, you can pretty much evade any incoming attack and counter it with something better. But it's those group battles that are just like, I don't know how they could get that to work. Because you'll often get caught in like invincible animations for grabs. And you have no idea when that animation is going to end and when you can actually hit them.
So as a single-player campaign, though, it sounds really short, but are you meant to play through it twice, once as Jack and once as whatever that guy's name is?
Yeah, so the other guy is Leo, who you were telling me, Henry, is a secret character from Mad World?
Not secret character. He's the villain reveal at the end of Mad World. Not a lot of people know that because they didn't beat Mad World because they got bored after hour five. But, yeah, Leo was
sort of one note.
Yes.
So it's a pretty, it's kind of cheesy, the system they use here. The levels are really wide open and pretty cool to explore, but you have to play through them once as Jack and once as Leo. And then if you want all the achievements, you got to go back and play it once as Leo and then once as Jack. It's a little corny, but honestly, they're just trying to get the most mileage out of what they have for the single player.
I will say that having watched the end of the game, it's a pretty good ending.
It's a great ending.
Yeah, pretty fun.
All the cinematics are like amazing to watch for someone like me who's like into anime style battles and stuff like that.
Well, as I found out from visiting Platinum Games, is that they have the same Their cinematic team, the guys who make the cutscenes, make the cutscenes for every game. They don't they don't shop them out. So I can see why the quality level will be consistent there. Yeah. Another weird thing about that game has a cyber ninja in it, despite the fact that they're putting out another cyber ninja game next month. Like, and Zero seems a
like
lot.
They like cyber ninjas.
Zero seems very similar to Raiden, I gotta say.
Oh,
except
and
he has two swords instead of one.
Yeah, he's pretty sweet. A word of warning, Bayonetta is in the game as pre-order exclusive DLC. So that
and
is,
only for multiplayer. Right?
Yeah, correct. That is bound to rub a lot of people the wrong way because that really should have been in the game.
It almost feels like I don't know why they didn't put Bayonetta and Guy from Vanquish. Like, they have like 3 stars. And they put
well, they can't have
they
guns,
put one really. And a half. Well, they could give him like a
he
gun
still
blade.
Has his he still has his punch. He punches
like they could have like it just feels like they have 3 stars and they put 1.5 of them in the game.
Yeah, I wonder if in a month she'll be paid DLC.
Hopefully. I'm God, I hope so.
So, what score did you give it?
So it got a 3 out of 5. If you are wanting to like it, then I think you will like it. But it's definitely not for everyone because some people will just be like, this is lowbrow and not challenging, and the multiplayer is just a little too crazy.
A little too crazy. Oh well. But you can find out a video
so
review.
Well.
You can see a video review for it on GamesRadar.com, and it'll probably end up being $15.
Already sooner 30. Rather than later. Yeah.
And for that price, I think I'll even pick it up.
Yeah, I mean,
it looks cool. I love platinum, so
yeah.
This could be the last Sega disc-based game they release anyway. So
yeah, I had heard rumors a while ago that it just flat-out wasn't being localized.
Yeah.
Basically, if you want to show Platinum that you like their games, then
well,
please, somebody.
The story of Anarchy Reigns is even weirder than that, because Anarchy Reigns, like, they fully localized it the first time. When it came out in Japan, like, 9 months ago, the English everything's on that disc. Like, so it was made for a pretty much universal release, and Sega just didn't do it until now. Like,
I think because like it just didn't do well in Japan.
Yeah,
and it was like, if this doesn't do well in Japan, how's it going to do in America? But I think then they were like, well, we can just release it for $30.
I say you should have expected that anyway. Platinum Games don't. I love Platinum Games.
Platinum Games are
don't sell.
I bet you Metal Gear will be their best selling by far.
By far.
Though Bayonetta sold well.
If it can break a million, then it'll top Bayonetta. But
hopefully it does, and you can find out more on GamesRadar.com.
See what happens.
And a video with them saying fuck a lot. Is that a thing that I heard?
Yeah,
being
the dialogue's actually really funny. And if you've watched the English dub of Cowboy Bebop, Steve Blum, the guy who plays Spike, he is Jack Kamen, so you will be hearing him curse quite a bit.
Steve Blum appears in pretty much everything.
Yeah, also in Bulletstorm.
God bless.
And everything else.
God bless Steve Blum. So, question of the week, last week.
What did you play over the week?
Yeah.
Break. God.
Break.
Over the break. Yeah.
My answer was Persona, by the way. In case
my
you...
answer was Persona.
My answer was Dark Souls.
What was yours? What did you play over the break?
I played Dark Persona. No.
That wasn't funny.
That was
wasn't a funny joke.
Lucas literally shit his brains out earlier.
I played, what did I play? I played Mass Effect 3.
I
think all of us.
I mean, we already answered this question.
I know, I'm just reminding people.
Anyway, our winner of the week is GoldenEye007, who writes, I started a new game of Donkey Kong 64 over the break. So we are going to give you a new game because you need a new game.
Yes.
Donkey Kong 64. Is it something that you should return?
The music
to?
In that game is amazing.
Oh, like the DK rap? DK rap is such a great,
not
such
that
great
song.
Music.
Yeah. The cave song.
No, no, no.
Is
I'm sure Donkey Kong 64 is a fine game.
Kong.
But it sounds like you could do something.
Donkey Kong gun. Is here.
So GoldenEye 007.
Here's coconut guns.
Shoot us an email at radioradar@gamesradar.com. And we will.
We got a lot of prizes to get
with just some random shit we got laying around the office and or some games. So we'll see what
Donkey
happens.
Next week's question, or this week's question.
This week's question
is: what's the game you're most anticipating in 2013? The reason being, we recently did a list of our 100 most anticipated games of the year. I will go first. My most anticipated game is actually like number 13 or 14. And it is South Park, The Stick of Truth. So I'm not even, like, I am a South Park fan, but I'm not, like, a crazy diehard. Like, I'm sure there's a few dozen, or there's probably, like, a dozen or two dozen episodes I just haven't seen. I'll sometimes just watch it in the background. I'm not always caught up on it, but I love the humor, and I think it's just a very well-written show. The writers of the show are writing the game, mm-hmm. and everything I've seen from the game makes it look like a big, sloppy, beautiful love letter to, I know that's a terrible phrase that's ever used, to kind of RPG video games with South Park style.
And because Obsidian's making it, it is a big, sloppy.
But that's okay because it's, I don't think, Obsidian is always making games that were too complicated. This game is not going to run into that issue.
Mm-hmm. It looks like the cartoon come to life.
It does. Like you'll see something. It's like, oh, this is a cutscene, and then you're controlling it. Like it's the first game that genuinely looks exactly like the TV show, down to every detail, and it has a really good sense of humor about video games. Like I don't remember exactly what it was, but it was like when you, it's like type in your character's name or something, and you type in something, and Cartman's like, oh, your name is Butthole, and it's like you hit no, you keep hitting no. And your character gets angrier and angrier, and Cartman's just like, it is decided. Your name is Butthole. Like, and like you, when you level up, you like the lowest level is like pussy. Like it goes up by like random insults that Cartman would yell at you.
Yeah.
And right. It just has a really, really funny tone. And the gameplay looks like a mix of sort of like a typical RPG, except the combat is Paper Mario or Mario RPG style, where it's like action, like hitting buttons to do more damage. And turn-based. Looks super good.
Really
good. What about you, LJ Sully?
I am looking forward most to Barkley 2. A.K.A. I'm not even going to try to say the name because I can't remember it from memory.
So it's a spiritual successor, sort of? Is it the same people or no?
It's the same people.
Oh, okay.
So this game was recently kickstarted, quite successfully, I might add, and it is the sequel to Barkley Shut Up and Jam Gaiden, which you can go play for free. I highly recommend that you do that because it is amazing. And this time they're trying to make it as fun as it is funny. So the first game was made in RPG Maker, and it was the writing was just hilarious, but the gameplay was okay. This time they're trying the top-down action shooter RPG style, and I think it's going to be godlike.
Cool. I wonder if Charles Barkley even knows that exists.
I would hope that he would have at least seen the trailer on YouTube.
I was going to say the funny part would be like one of the Kickstarter tiers should have been like we're going to try like at like $5 million. We try really hard to get him to do voiceover.
One of them was a Super Bowl commercial. That was not reached.
What was it at? Like?
It was like 1.2 million.
mine would be, mine in reality is whatever Nintendo announces at E3. But for right now, what we know, I would say The Last of Us. Because I really, Naughty Dog is one of the best developers of this generation. Now they're finally getting out of their Uncharted trilogy, and they're starting this whole new universe. I really like the its take on the apocalyptic world, and the thing that put me over the edge for this game was that some of the high-level people that worked on Enslaved are working on The Last of Us, and that's why it has a pretty similar kind of overgrown apocalypse ethos to the world, which I really like.
I remember the level designer from Enslaved was hired by Naughty Dog, and that's in his Twitter profile he was working on Uncharted, and then the day The Last of Us was announced he's like, oh thank god, I can finally say that I haven't even touched, I had nothing to do with Uncharted. Not that it's bad, he's just like, I'm at this company and everybody's like, what are you working on? He's like, you know, just making levels for Uncharted. He's like, I was leading this other game, I had nothing to do with that. That was an amazing game, but don't stop giving me credit for it, I didn't do it.
So yeah, can't wait for that.
So I could say Dark Souls 2 here, just because that's probably the correct answer. But I, God
damn it,
I'm
also reading people say that that's probably not coming out this year.
Really?
Yeah, there's some rumors that it's 2014 at the earliest.
No way.
That is some shit. But yeah, I was promised more talking Magic Gathering. Now that Lucas Sullivan is in the room, I feel like I can talk about Duels of Planeswalks 2014, which is an amazing game that completely fueled
isn't announced
my,
yet.
It's basically, it's going to be the exact same game with different cards. That's okay.
You think so?
I think so, yeah.
There's so many better things that they could be doing with that game that would make the interest in Magic the Gathering grow just exponentially.
Basically, Tom, this is a gateway drug that they're just repurposing year after year. And clearly, you are living proof.
Why not put some extra effort into it? We can get like drafting. We were discussing how we could actually get drafting.
Never
going to
happen
because you could do.
So that's the end of the podcast.
You would delete all the cards.
Episode 21 of Radio Radar.
Get through the draft.
Shoot us an email.
It won't cannibalize.
Radio Radar at gamesradar.com.
Because, you know.
We have a Twitter.
They would
right, Henry?
Yeah, GR at GR Radio Radar.
It out, right?
GR Radio Radar. Or just Games Radar Twitter.
It's really important that they get like,
also,
some
actual strategy.
Also, review
us on iTunes. Yeah, those reviews. We do definitely need.
I think
all
it's
of those
very
reviews.
Helpful to know if there's a mid-range and aggro control.
And,
those are very
also, check out our YouTube channel, youtube.com/gamesradar.
Like,
we have some cool trailer analysis videos.
About how those things work.
And, oh, like we said, the 100 most anticipated games of all time.
Obviously, getting planeswalkers
it'll be on the front page.
It doesn't even make sense that they're not in there.
Please.
Because it's called Duel of the Planeswalkers.
Talk to you next week.
Bye.
That is totally something that they could do.
You done?
Yeah.
All right, so the question is, which is more responsible for the fraying of our moral fabric?
Oh! So.
Man, I get too many good ones on this.
Yeah. I drew Portal.
Okay, so you're going with Portal.
The fraying of our moral fabric. In Portal, not only are you ripping space-time, you are, in fact, grappling with one of the most evilest of evil... yet likable villains ever in GLaDOS. And by portraying GLaDOS as such a likable villain, it's basically teaching the kids to be a villain. So it's teaching them to, say, inflict horrific science experiments on their fellow man in the pursuit of science. And that is really corrupting our youth. And will lead to basically a Black Mesa situation.
All right. I went with Civ, Civ 3 specifically. And the reason is, so obviously, I'll say humanity, but I mainly mean white imperialists, have done some terrible things in the name of expansion. And it's easy to look at history books and be like, man, why would they do that? But when you're playing Civilization and you're randomly spawned on a medium-sized continent with only one other nation, it's really only a few hundred years before you're like, you know what? I want what's mine. And right now, what's mine is right under your city.
Is in fact yours.
Yeah. So, I mean, by playing – every time I play a game of Civilization, I inevitably will find myself doing – you understand.
You empathize with the colonial aspects.
You do. You understand Manifest Destiny.
Right.
It is your destiny, and it's not just because you want to win. I don't even play Civ to win. I just play it to like almost like a sandbox kind of thing. Huh. And it's like I'm going to look at this world, and if I go to a place, if you have oil, I'm going to convince my people that we need to wage war on you.
Right.
Holy shit! I understand you, George Bush.
Yeah.
I understand you completely. Please play Civ with me.
Mine's Mortal Kombat and. Just as Tipper Gore and Senator Lieberman taught
Remember
us.
Tipper Gore?
Yes.
Remember when that was a thing people cared
they're,
about?
They're divorced now.
They are?
They are divorced.
Was it because of that thing
it
where...
It shows you the corrupting influence of society had to destroy their marriage.
Was it also because of that report that came out that said he tried to, like...
What?
He tried to... He got,
murder
like...
Her?
No, he got, like... Allegedly... I thought there was a story about like him trying to hit on like a masseuse, a female masseuse.
I hadn't heard of this.
Hasn't tried to hit on a female.
Anyway, this is neither here nor there. Mortal Kombat is proof of a shadowy, evil, corrupting industry that is video games, tricking children into murdering people and teaching them how to behead other people and turn them into ice and then rip their spine out. I mean, it teaches kids all these horrible traits. So. That's how it destroys.